I'd like to thank Pat very much for this opportunity to come back again this year to talk about physical therapy. What I'd like to do today is to give you an overview very quickly of what's involved in physical therapy through the ages and, or really rather the stages of the condition, and how you can use your physical therapist, but more importantly, how you can work in partnership, because unfortunately, so much of physical therapy needs to be a daily activity. It's rather like learning a musical instrument. If you go to your piano lesson once a week and do nothing in between, you won't end up in the Sydney piano competition. But rather, if you do it every day, things might happen. So the CDC working party have developed or have looked at the stages of Duchenne, and these are the ones that we're going to address today. So the early stage, mid-ambulatory, late ambulatory, or used to be called the transition stage, and the three stages of the non-ambulatory condition. So I'll look first at the early stage. This can be from any time from diagnosis. Some boys are diagnosed at birth, but as you know, most are not. The usual age of diagnosis is anywhere between sort of 3 to 5 years. So in the early stage, your physical therapist may not be particularly needed so often, but a small percentage of boys present with global developmental delays. They have difficulty reaching their gross motor milestones. So if you find a good developmental pediatric physiotherapist or physical therapist, they could help you there, to just give him that little nudge and get him along. I also firmly believe that it's important from the very beginning to get good instruction in stretching regimes, because even though the major problem with Duchenne is progressive muscle wasting and weakness, probably the secondary problems are where we can hop in and do our best work. So we're looking at preventing the development of contractures. So early instruction in stretching can really not only help you get into the swing of it, but it also enhances the child's ability to accept this very, very early and develops the routine and establishes it well in advance of when the tightness might begin to show. We also, in Australia, begin swimming really, really early. All children are perhaps in Australia are taught swimming at a very early age anyway, so it's really important for our Duchenne boys as well, so that they become familiar with the water. So the manual stretching I'm not going to go into in this session at all, because as Doug mentioned, there are at least three sessions on physical therapy here at this meeting, and I urge you to bring any of your questions, your feet, your arms, your legs, and we'll do some demonstrations for you and show you the best ways. So mainly in the beginning, in this early stage, we're looking at heel cord stretches, and they can be done in a number of different ways. Manually, they can do active heel stretches with parents. These are just similar to active sport stretches. And we're also looking at hip flexors and iliotibial bands in the early stages, but as I said before, it's not likely that there's going to be a tightness there. It's just preparing, just checking. Aquatic physiotherapy, as I said, is very, very important. It's the best form of exercise. It still is the best form of exercise because muscles are working concentrically. The load on the muscles is low, and they can really not only exercise to the fullest without any danger of causing harm to the muscles, but it's also a really fun activity that they can do throughout life on an even footing with their peers. So we're aiming to make him water safe. We're aiming to make him independent, an independent swimmer as early as possible. As he grows older and progresses through the stages, it provides freedom of movement in the later years. Non-weight-bearing exercise, other forms are bicycles, because the load on the muscles is once again less. That should have been a video, and it should have showed you that little boy with a bicycle with the pedals mounted on the front, which makes it easier for him to pedal. So we're now looking at the mid-ambulatory stage. This is the stage where he is starting to show a few problems. Perhaps he's starting to walk with a wider base. His lordosis is coming in. He may not have good heel strike. He might be coming up on his toes a little bit, but he's still really functional. He's getting around and he's doing things quite well. This is probably the stage where your physical therapist will really come into her own or his own to look after you and guide you on your way. So here we're really advising on the appropriate forms of active exercise. We're reinforcing the stretches again and looking at all the other secondary complications which could arise and providing prophylactic or preemptive care to prevent it happening. We might also be looking at equipment needs here, especially things like splinting, orthotics to maintain range of movement, or providing some sort of transport for long distance travel so that he can enjoy an activity when he gets there, so he can keep up with his peers in the playground, get to the oval, get to the tuck shop, get there before his friends. And also, your physical therapist can be a big help if you use her or him to assist you with schools. Schools can sometimes be a bit tricky, perhaps in mainstreams, and they may have different expectations of your child because they're dealing with other disabilities where people tend to really push independence and keeping up and struggling, making your son do more than he possibly should. So you could use your physical therapist to act as an advocate here for you and change physical education programs to suit him so he has an adaptive parallel program. So what do we know about exercise? And this is a big question, and lots of people smarter than me have been looking at it for a long time, and it's still a big question. We do know that some exercise is really, really important for health and well-being for all of us, including your son with Duchenne. We know that no exercise leads to muscle wasting, but in Duchenne we know that too much and the wrong sort of exercise can lead to muscle breakdown. We know that some forms of exercise are more damaging than others. And Craig McDonald from UCLA in Sacramento has done a very interesting study with a step activities monitor and discovered that boys with Duchenne from quite an early age were 40% less active than their age matched peers at all sorts of different levels. So this is interesting to bear in mind. So we'll have a quick look at the evidence, and I mean a quick look because a lot of it has been dealt with very well today, especially by Andrew earlier. So the evidence for exercise comes from our increasing knowledge of the pathophysiology of Duchenne. Andrew's explained this beautifully. We also need to look at some of the exercise, normal exercise physiology, and there's a raft of papers and literature out there looking at sports medicine, and also physical therapy in the aging has given us a lot of clues about, you know, not allowing people to be sedentary and do nothing. And of course, there are the animal models of Duchenne. I won't go into the pathophysiology because Andrew's described how dystrophin acts not only as a shock absorber but as an anchor and also a scaffolding within inside the muscle membrane. And also he's explained how some form of exercise, especially eccentric exercise, causes tears in the membrane and eventual muscle breakdown. And that cycle of degeneration and regeneration continues until the body loses its capacity to regenerate, and it's then when the boys start to show some weakness. The studies in the mouse model, MDX model, have been interesting, even though the mouse is not a particularly good model, being a quadruped and being very small, so the weight of gravity doesn't have such a big effect on him. But these models have shown us that eccentric exercise does cause more damage. By eccentric, I mean that the muscle fibre is lengthening as it fires, as opposed to concentric. So if you're lifting a heavy weight with your hand Lifting it up is a concentric exercise. The muscle is shortening. If you are slowly lowering it down, that's eccentric because the muscle is working hard, but it's lengthening as it's firing. Other studies have looked at increased cell death and reduced strength, muscle fiber damage, etc. Also from the muscle, the MDX mouse, we see that some form of exercise, such as endurance exercise, and in this case it was swimming, can be beneficial in increasing strength and reducing fatigue. And the next paper looked at voluntary wheel running, and for me the interesting word here was voluntary, because as physical therapists, we don't usually worry about voluntary. Physical terrorists, we're often called, but we really have to think out of the box here because we're not really thinking rehabilitation here. So it isn't a matter of getting your child into the room and saying 20 repetitions of 10 sets, etc. This would be counterproductive. And if your physical therapist is still doing this, you need to direct her to some of the research and or to a physical therapist who has been looking after boys with Duchenne. The other voluntary exercises were thought to reduce the progression or delay the progression in the diaphragm, and Andrew Hoey's lab is doing some interesting looking at swimming again and coming up with this wonderful results that it is in fact benefiting the heart. So what should we consider from all of these three methods of what we have? I think we really have to remember that there is active ongoing degeneration of muscle fibres and there is a real risk of overwork here. The other thing that I find interesting is that the MDX mouse does show considerable avoidance behaviour for exercise. He will voluntarily hop off his little wheel and have a good rest in comparison with his C57 counterpart. Why? I think that it's quite normal behaviour. He knows how much he can do, and I think our boys know too. And once again, this is where your physical therapist has to be alerted to the fact that she isn't rehabilitating here. And once again, I just bring to your attention that boys with Duchenne are, according to Craig McDonald's study, 40% less active at a very, very young age. And I think this makes sense. They know how much they can do. And yes, we all do agree that it would be lovely to have scientifically based recommendations for optimal exercise for boys with Duchenne to find this balance which will promote well-being and enhance quality of life while doing minimal harm. But there are very big problems to this. You can't actually do any random double-blind controlled studies on boys because our primary idea is to do no harm. And if we really believe from the pathophysiology and MDX studies, etc., that some form of exercise will do harm, we certainly wouldn't do it. And the challenges are also that boys do present very differently. You heard Stan tell us this today. I've known families where there are three boys, each one of them presenting very differently, losing ambulation at a different time, responding to treatment very differently. So this does make it very difficult for us to decide or to evaluate our treatment protocols. And, of course, animal models don't truly represent the phenotypes found in boys with Duchenne. Compounding problem is that we're comparing quadrupedal locomotion with bipedal locomotion. The effects of gravity are extremely different in these animals and boys. And we can use what we can from the MDX studies, but there is a limitation. So what shall we make of all this and what should we recommend? Exercise will obviously depend on boys' response to steroids, and Doug's given you a wonderful outline. We've only been using steroids for 7 years where I come from, but even that has given us a long enough time to know that some boys will respond extremely well, Some respond reasonably well, and unfortunately, there's the odd one who doesn't respond at all. And this response to steroids will definitely make a difference on their activity level, what they'll want to do, how much they'll want to do, and for how long they want to do it. You'll see that he's having considerable difficulty already walking, and he's got a wide-based lordotic stance. He's already have contractures of 1 foot, so he is developing a scoliosis already. And at the time this video was taken, he lost ambulation very soon afterwards. This young man, if you could see him, he runs flat out. He's been on steroids for 5 years, and when he rises from standing, he gets up from the floor without a sign of a Gauss manoeuvre and very, very quickly. So you see this little boy, he's 9. He's having quite a lot of difficulty. You can see he's got a beginning of a scoliosis and he's up on his toes. In comparison, little boy also 9. After 5 years of prednisone, you can see how well he's running. And it's very hard for me as his physical therapist to stop him doing physical activity, which is a problem, because as I might, I just want to show you now how he gets up from the ground. No sign of a Gauss, really, really quickly. And before steroids, none of our boys could hop at all. Here's this little chap hopping quite well. Yeah. I'm glad I could show you that. This young man is 12 and a bit, and as you can see, he's not running as well as the 9-year-old, but he is still running, and he's doing well. He's been on prednisone for 7 years. So what should we make of this? How much exercise? I think it's important, whether a boy's on steroids or not on steroids, that they have some age-appropriate recreational activities, not formal exercise regimes. They should do, where possible, concentric low load, so there's your swimming again. Beware of overdoing it still. So make sure that there's plenty of restful activity between their active pursuits. And we like to provide them with transport for long distances and things, so that even if they can run and do that, they do save that energy. So I shouldn't be wasting your time now, but this is the same little boy doing his active swimming. This is another thing that we've found recently. This is a power-assisted bike. This is the 12-year-old again. He goes out in the road with his friends on his bicycle. When he's tired, he just swings it into motor and off he goes. Now, as I said earlier, one of the most important things is the prevention of contractures wherever possible. These are done by stretches, which can be done in a number of different ways. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Orthotics are important, I feel. We do a number of other things, such as lying prone to stretch hip flexors, using standing frames. In some parts of the world, including here in the States, people use long leg calipers or CAFOs. But the mixture of stretches and orthotics do produce the best results. There's one very good paper by Sylvia Hyde which highlights this. Stretches can be done, as I said, in many, many ways. The aim of it really is to maintain the length in those muscles, which will tighten. I believe that it prevents the scar tissue from firming up in that shortened position. And this has a bearing on whether you do stretches every day or once a week. If you do it once a week, that scar tissue is probably already firming in a tightened position. If you do it every day, you've got a fighting chance that you're not going to have this happen. It definitely prolongs the ability to walk if they have no contractures. Later on, it helps them keep their feet flat on the footpath. Certainly makes dressing easier, and comfort, and I must stress particularly comfort in bed. Boys who are severely contracted have very few, less ability to change their position. We'll talk about those tomorrow. Orthotics, these are night splints. If you wear them in bed at night for a few hours, it keeps the foot in the best position so that the bed clothes aren't pushing down into the plantar flex position, which is what causes contracture. This is one way of providing independent mobility in this stage. It certainly allows him to, as I said, to keep up with his peers. So PT intervention in the late ambulatory transition stage, this is often the most trying time for the boy and his parents. He's struggling to walk by now, and he's finding it a bit more difficult. So we're, apart from looking at stretches and all the usual things, we're looking at respiratory monitoring. Jonathan's talked about this particularly well. You may not need your physical therapist here. You may have a respiratory therapist. But if you don't, your physical therapist should be able to help you here as well. We're looking at wheelchairs, provision of standing frames and things like that. One of the most important things, I feel, is to look at posture and seating. Because if you consider, so much will depend also on whether they've been on steroids or not, which I'll talk about. But if you have a child who has very poor paraspinal muscles, it's rather like planting a little sapling on a windy slope and expecting it not to bend in the breeze if you don't support it well. The chair that we'll provide will be an individualised one. It will suit your child, and you need to consult your occupational therapist, your physical therapist, to get the best thing for your child. A boy who's standing in the stage, he'll have this locked-in, balanced, lordotic stance, but the moment you put him in sitting, this is what happens. He loses the normal lumbar curve and sits most often in this kyphotic position. We don't really like this because it just promotes the possibility of spinal curvature. So we then move on to the child who is now in a wheelchair full time. In the early stage, so much will depend on whether he's been on steroids or not, because as Doug told you, if he's been on steroids and continuing steroids, he'll have good upper limb strength, he'll have good spinal muscles, risk of scoliosis will be vastly reduced, better respiratory function, better cardiac function. But it is very important to monitor this very closely. And we're going to be very, very careful of those secondary problems again. So your stretches continue, but by now, because the child is no longer having dependent upper limbs, contractures in the upper limb are likely to begin. So we're looking at elbows, forearms, long finger flexors. We'll talk about these tomorrow. We're going to be ever vigilant about the development of a scoliosis, or sometimes they have a hyperlordotic posture or a long C kyphosis. Standing frames are brilliant if the child can tolerate it or if the school can incorporate it, because it stretches ankles, hips and knees all at one stage. This early ambulatory stage is a really good time for these. As I said, the supply of the wheelchair will be just so dependent on what your child can do and what stage he's at. If he has very good upper limb function and good spine, he may well like to use this eMotion wheelchair, which is really lovely. It's lightweight, can be packed in a car, no need for a van, all those sorts of things. But as I said, he really does have to have a good spine particularly. In the mid stage, we're looking to accommodate loss of upper limb function if this occurs. We're looking, checking the spine. We're looking at respiratory function, particularly making sure that they have cough assist training. Jonathan's done a wonderful sell on the cough assist, so I'm not going to add to that, but I heartily agree with him. It has made such a big difference to boys with Duchenne. And there is a need for specialised equipment which your PT can help you organise. This is the child who doesn't have strong paraspinal muscles. He doesn't sit well. He's the one that needs support and a good supportive chair. Most chairs don't come with that good support. The weight of gravity through the erect spine will cause it to collapse. And this chair doesn't offer any support for the spine. So we're looking at providing a headrest. That's very important because boys have very weak neck flexors. If they haven't got a headrest, they lean forward, neck extensors become really tight, and then they lose their lower field of vision, when they do sit back. We need to support the backrest. We need to give lateral supports. Some of the problems that we see, scoliosis, hyperlordosis, or a long C kyphosis, in those cases we provide a chair similar to this one, which will be well set up for him. Provide snug fit. Now allow no possibility of leaning, but of course we have to monitor for growth. We always supply a tilt in space mechanism. This allows the boy to change his position at will, not only for comfort, but to allow the weight of gravity to be off his erect spine. These chairs are wonderful. These are permobile standing wheelchairs. They also allow a lot of position changes and variability. After spinal surgery, which is fortunately becoming less frequent, boys often appear to lose upper limb function, but it's really more an inability to make those compensatory movements that they got into the habit of doing to make up for loss of upper limb function. We need to add a few stretches at this stage. This is a stretch for tibialis posterior. If you're not standing, boys tend to get the feet inverted as well as plantar flexed. So not only point down, but they turn in as well. We have to include long finger flexors because sometimes the boys get very tight and they do need these hands for computers and PlayStations and all those things they like to do. Swimming, of course, is still very important. If you can get it, I realise that some states and some places it's a bit more hard to find a swimming pool that's heated and warm, but if you can, it's still a wonderful form of exercise, time out of chair. In the late stage, all the usual things continue, but we might be looking at switches and environmental controls. We might be looking at electric beds, pressure-relieving mattresses and those sorts of things. Swimming, of course, this young man is 32 years of age now. He swims every day. He just likes to cruise around on the bars and do things like that, but he says it just makes him feel really, really good. He does backward sculling on his back, and he just really enjoys it. So I'd like to thank you from this our part of the world, the top end of the world, and this is what we do for recreation in the top end of the world. Thank you.